Welcome to a Revival House sermon where we champion you to become the unveiling of Jesus to this world.
I just kept hearing this theme everywhere, everyone I'd listened to, and different things, and even in my own prayers and thoughts, and I was kept hearing about the promised land. Kept hearing about the promised land, kept thinking about some promises, kept dwelling on some of those things, and I was like, okay, Lord, well, so I'm just going to jump right into something there. Hebrews 4, probably 1 through 13. Now the promise, or actually, I'm going to skip up to chapter 3, I'm going to grab the last verse right there, 19, right above chapter 4. It's kind of that chapter cuts it right there, but it's kind of interesting. You got to grab that verse. It says, "It is clear that they could not enter into their inheritance because they wrapped their hearts in unbelief. Now the promise of entering into God's rest is still for us today. So we must be extremely careful to ensure that we all embrace the fullness of that promise and not fail to experience it." Experience. "For we have heard the good news of deliverance just as they did, yet they didn't join their faith with the word. Instead, what they heard, they didn't affect them deeply, for they doubted. For those who believe, faith activates the promise, and we experience the realm of confident rest. For he has said, 'I was grieved with them and made a solemn oath, they will not enter into my rest.' God's works have all been completed from the foundation of the world, for it says in the scriptures, 'On the seventh day, God rested from all of his works.' And again, as stated before, 'They will not enter into my rest.' Those who first heard the good news of deliverance failed to enter into that realm of faith's rest," faith's rest, possessive, "because of their unbelieving hearts. Yet the fact remains that we still have the opportunity to enter into the faith rest life and experience the fulfillment of the promise. For God still has ordained a day for us to enter into the called today, for it was long afterwards that God repeated it to date in David's words, 'If only today you would listen to his voice and do not harden your hearts.' Now if the promise of rest was fulfilled when Joshua brought the people into the land, God wouldn't have spoken later of another rest yet to come. So we conclude that there is still a full and complete Sabbath rest waiting for believers to experience. As we enter into God's faith rest life, we cease from our own works, just as God celebrates his finished works and rest in them. So then, we must be eager to experience this faith rest life, so that no one falls short by following the same pattern of doubt and unbelief." And we're going to stop there. There's kind of a lot, but the first thing you realize really quickly is there's lots of words multiple times to experience this. What does that mean? This is not in heaven. This is for you today. And yes, it will be in heaven, whatever that may be. But this is the promise that you get to experience now, right? Don't let somebody steal this from you and put it in heaven or a millennium or something that you just, so long as you can't reach it, right? This is what a promise for you today. And then it says here in 3, "For those who believe, faith activates the promise and experience the realm of confident rest." And he goes later on to say in 8 here that he says, "We know that there is a rest a realm of rest that we can experience that the Israelites did not experience even though they went into the promised land. And I don't claim this quote. It's just a brilliant, well-worded quote from Damon Thompson once that he was talking about this. And he says, the Israelites entered into the promised land, right? But they never actually got to experience God's rest inside of the promised land. And it's still offered for us believers to experience today. So the quote is, they entered the land, but they missed the realm. I think it's brilliant. I wish I came up with that, but I didn't. But they entered a land, but they did not enter a realm. Because the invitation was that this promised land was going to facilitate a realm of rest in faith. And as Brian Simmons so eloquently puts faith, rest, life together. Those are all deep, deep, deep Greek words. All of those. Every single one is just packed. You could study each one of those. It's Zoe life. Like faith's Zoe life, which is like God life. Anyways, I'm not actually focusing on that. But the reality is that that land was supposed to facilitate an encounter with a realm of rest. And they missed that. They still went into the promised land. I think that's pretty interesting. They still went into the promised land, but that wasn't fully it. He wanted you to take you out of slavery into a promised land, but then you step into a realm of rest and faith inside of that promised land. Because when you think of rest, what do you think about when you think about rest? There's no wrong answers here. But how do you guys rest? What's some of your, some people have activities. My activity for rest is more work that tires me out. It's kind of a joke against me. It doesn't work. Don't do what I do. But anyways, I'm learning. Like, how do you rest? What's restful to you guys? Quietness. That comes from a mom of 6 kids. If I ever, yeah, that makes sense. Quietness. Yeah. What else? I mean, there's no wrong answers. Like, I'm going to show you that all of it is, but correct. Not all wrong, but I'm going to show you that you're all wrong. No. Now, how do you rest? You go fishing? Something? Sleep? Yeah. Sleep. Some people don't need sleep. I don't know who they are, but it's not me. Anything else? Anything else that you think about, I just want to relax and do this thing, or maybe I don't want to do nothing. Maybe I want to sit out and drink coffee or whatever. And you go, that sounds relaxing to me. Anyone else? Does nobody else know how to rest? Nobody else has answered anything. Huh, interesting. This is the real message. I didn't know. No. Join the club. Hi, I'm Anthony. I don't know how to rest. Bunch of addicts in here. Anyone else? Anyone else that anything you can think of? Pleasurable, enjoyable. Eating ice cream. Eating period for Josiah. The teenage boys said eating. This makes sense too. All of this lining up. Yeah. Don't do nothing good. That is true. Me too. I have to force myself. I really do. Which says something. Lord's working on it. Lord's working on it. Right? So maybe you have activities. And I find it interesting that the Israelites spent 40 years with God miraculously feeding them. Right? Now, obviously, they had to work. They had to do many things. They had to move around constantly. But they spent all of their time being miraculously fed with water and with food and all of these things. But the promised land is actually where they had to go grow food. Like the miraculous miracles that God did, all of that stuff. He says, no, the real promised land is where you work. I mean, you're going to have to go till the ground. You're going to have to actually go build. You're going to have to actually go make a land. It may be a promised land, but now you have to make a culture, a cities, these things. You know? And yet he said, but that's going to be the place where you find rest. To me, that tells me something a little bit about rest. Tells me a little bit about something about work and what work could be. He says, I'm going to spend these 40 years preparing you to go into this land so that you can build. And that's your promised land. And it's going to be, and it was the invitation was, it's going to be in a realm. This land is going to actually give you the place to encounter a realm of faith rest. That's pretty interesting to me. Right? In our minds, and I think perhaps we've been a little influenced. Think about this. Perhaps our influence of heaven is, finally I get to go sit in a fluffy cloud or something. You know, people say that. You know, and if you had a really hard life, you get a fluffier cloud. And what does that say? Yeah, we get to heaven and we stop doing everything and now we just get to kumbaya, you know? And that's rest. And that's the finish line for us. But God's idea is, actually, my true promised land is where you get to create. You get to build. And you're going to get to do it in rest. And I don't know I think we're a little bit influenced probably by Plato and other non-Christian authors of heaven and ideas, because basically we've flipped the script, right? Like we've basically said, hey, when they were in the desert, that would be heaven for us because we don't have to cook anymore, right? We're just going to have manna given to us. But God said, no, your promised land is where you're actually going to have to grow your food. I thought it was interesting. It's okay. I guess I'll give you a discount on the way out. I won't charge you for that one. But so I started thinking about, you know, how we were created to live in a land of promise and experience the realm of rest. And now the realm of rest is offered to us, right? That it says they actually totally missed it, but now you can experience this faith rest life every single day. And actually in your promised land, building can be done in a place of rest. And I too am kind of like that, where I do nothing well, is that I don't know how to rest very well. But as he's been teaching me over the last year and a half or so, I get little glimpses into that where I hit these moments with the Spirit that I encounter rest, and it feels like the most refreshing, easy thing I've ever done, and yet I'm still moving, still building, still enjoying, but I've stepped into a different realm. And I don't really have the time for it, nor the full ability to express it, but even in my own study of like quantum mechanics and stuff like that, I realize, wow, this realm was really built for rest, but it was also built for huge accomplishments. It was built to create out of rest. And I think there's a certain invitation for us to step into a realm that we would build incredible things out of a place in our inner world of total rest. You know, God, we may have these different activities that we like for rest, but God rested not because he was tired, right? He rested because of the joy of perfection. So if you're invited into a realm of rest, what is the rest celebrating? there's perfection somewhere and you're celebrating it. Maybe the reason in Western Christianity we lack so little rest is because we don't actually have a cross that is perfect. Whoops. Maybe we've made the cross just the climax of anxiety rather than the culmination of life and forgiveness. And maybe it actually doesn't bring much rest to you, because rest is actually the celebration of perfection. And I think if we got a true picture of what the cross really was, it would begin to cement rest inside of us, because we would see the perfection of the cross and we would know, I don't have to grovel up this mountain to God, that he actually lives in me. If you have no reason to go up the mountain to God, what are you going to do? Sit down and enjoy him, I guess. And then build. I mean, I just think about these things that I'm wondering, maybe we have in Western Christianity been unable to build anything worth substantial time is because we've been so busy trying to climb up the mountain to get to God that we've never considered maybe we're already at the top of the mountain with God and he's wanting to build something. And yet we've poured all of our energy trying to get to him. And we've poured no energy into building anything worthwhile. And that becomes out of a place of rest. When we see the perfection of the cross, which then turns into a mirror of your perfection of righteousness, you go, I don't have to try to get up this mountain anymore. I am perfectly righteous. I am as righteous as God. And as it's been said, and I agree, none of us believe that yet. None of us. I don't. But the statement is true, that if he imputed his righteousness upon us, we are as righteous as God is. So what are you going to spend the rest of your life trying to do? Become righteous? You're as righteous as God. Maybe you should enter into your promised land and rest in the perfection of who you are in him and begin to build something for another generation. I don't know who said it first, because I've heard multiple different people say it. Maybe they're quoting somebody. I don't know. None of them ever give credit. But there's this quote, and it's I've mulled it about. And this quote is, all anxiety comes from a dysfunctional relationship with time. It's okay. I heard it like a year ago, and I still don't think I understand it. But I'm starting to look at some things. I'm starting to test it. All anxiety comes from a dysfunctional relationship with time. Now think about your life. How much of your anxiety is actually built around timing? How much of your anxiety is down to the minuscule thing of what am I going to get done tomorrow? What am I going to do here? What am I going to do that? What am I going to do in a week? Or what about this person? Or how am I going to get this done in time? Or how am I going to become the person that God wants to me to be in time? And how am I going to get everything done that God wants me to get done? Orion's smiling over there. When am I going to get this job, you know? When is this thing going to happen? You're sitting there thinking about it. What is it? The anxiety is fueled off a dysfunctional relationship with the time. When is it going to happen? So I started to think about that a little bit. So here we are, God saying, hey, you guys are now in the promised land. Out of your bondage of slavery, you're in the promised land. You're free, and there's an invitation for you to experience a realm of rest. But there's also the possibility we could miss it, because we just maybe don't realize how good he is. A lot of people talk about, you know, unbelief in a really condemning way, condemning people. How dare you have that unbelief? But a lot of times that word for unbelief is just not believing enough of the right thing. Maybe you just need to grow in the right thing, which is just his goodness. Like, it's okay. But here we are in this realm, and he's saying, you can build an entire nation that the world is all blessed by, all in rest. And that rest is the perfection of who I am, the perfection of who you are in that, and that you no longer are separated because it never really was real in the first place. And if self-separation is not in the equation, then time doesn't matter because we're already together. And you can do whatever you want with me. And so I started thinking about that in our places. And then I started thinking, all right, what are the things, you know, when we think of the future, I've talked about this before, but when we think of the future, as it's been coined, I think it was Paul Young that coined it, called it future tripping, right? It's when we imagine the future and what everything's going to happen and how it's all going to go, and we're tripping out on the future, and then we're getting all worried and we're freaking out and all that stuff. And what are we doing? We're imagining in time what's coming our way, and also in our own imaginations. God's like not there for some reason, and we can't feel grace in that moment because that's in the future. Grace is for you today, right now. There's grace for now. There's grace for today. But if the devil could get us to future trip, and if the devil could get us continually caught up in time, he could always keep us in anxiety, always keep us out of rest, and always keep us out of living life more abundantly. You know? And a little bit, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, and it's okay. But I think about time. What is the big thing that we're all so caught up in? Time. What is it? It's the end of time. Oh, what's that called? End times. I think I was okay. I was laying in bed just a few nights ago, and I was thinking, and I had this thought. I was like, what if we're here for another 5,000 years? What if we're here for another 5,000 years? What would be the devil's tactic to get us to mess up? Try to make it think it's ending now. I mean, I'm just saying. I'm just making some observations here. You don't have to stone me. But I'm just thinking. Technically, we would be in the early church. You're like, but we're 2,000 years in. I guess it doesn't really matter. We'd be considered the early church. But what if we're here for another 5,000 years? If we're here for another 5,000 years, or beyond that, or less than that, whatever, I don't care. If we're here for another 5,000 years, what is the best tactic for the devil to get the church to not be effective? Don't plan for it. Don't plan for it. Because if you believe, all right, it's happening really, really soon, or even just within 100 years, or whatever you want to say, if it's happening really, really soon, and you don't plan for the future, you don't build something worth that's going to last, you don't actually look over the long-term game, you lose everything. But if you do plan for the future, you lose nothing. I mean, if it happens tomorrow, I lose nothing. I'm just saying, what is the most anxiety-creating and time-related thing that we have? End times. If I were the devil, what would I be doing? I would be telling everybody. I would be sending dreams everywhere. I would be running people ragged, thinking about the end, getting them anxiety-filled with time. That's what I would be doing. That's how I would get the church to be completely useless. And you know what? Bingo, we're already there. Hey, the whole rapture theology came around in the 1800s. By somebody that had, look, I believe in visions, okay? But somebody that had a vision a girl had a vision, and then John Darby picked it up and said, yeah, this is gospel. And then D.L. Moody said, well, I like dispensationalism, but I don't really like rapture theology, but I'll put it in my Bible anyways. And you know what? What happened in the 1800s? The Great Disappointment. You know what the Great Disappointment was in the mid-1800s? Was a bunch of people got in white robes and got on top of a hill because somebody predicted the coming of Jesus. You ever heard of those before? I bet you got 88 reasons why. That's a rapture joke. There's a book. 88 Reasons Why Jesus is Coming Back in 1988. Anyways, didn't come back in 1988. New copy in 1989. 89 Reasons Why. Anyways, that's beyond the point. We've had great disappointment after great disappointment after great disappointment. They literally, I read the story. It's pretty amazing. The anxiety of time, what it can make us do. They all got in white robes, got on top of this hill. Jesus was coming back, evidently only for them. Don't really know how that worked. But anyways, and you know what? Nothing happened. That was in the 1800s. And we've been doing this over and over and over and over, and it's worked really well. If we were in a war and I was running covert operations for the devil, I'd be killing it right now. I'd be like, hey, what should we do? Well, let's do Jesus is Coming Back. That worked last time, 10 years ago. Let's do it again. This way, they won't actually look at what's happening to their country. This way, they won't actually care what's happening to America. This way, they won't actually care what's happening to their education system. This way, they won't care what's happening in the pharmaceutical companies and their health companies. This way, they won't care about their colleges. This way, they won't care about these things because they've got something better. Because someone's going to come in with a rescue plan. And they won't have to take the responsibility of what they have built. I'll just keep doing that. Come on. Who's Jesus coming to marry? Pure, holy, victorious bride. All anxiety comes from a dysfunctional relationship with time. Maybe one of the reasons we don't have rest is because we have a dysfunctional relationship with time itself. Think about, if you will actually go down this rabbit hole, you realize, oh my gosh, every part of my life is based off of this. You got the relationship of time, Jesus' return, but then you got your relationship of time of your death, if you believe in it. I'm going to die. This is things going to happen. I got to get this done. You know, you're going to keep on living after you die. I don't know what it's going to look like. But Jesus said, death is gone, defeated, over. All right? It's got zilch, nada, nothing left. You're not going to die. The early church didn't even believe in death. They were like, nah, you're not going to die. Yeah, go get burnt on the stake. Martyr, woo, big prize. It's your physical body, I get it. But, this dysfunctional relationship with time there. The dysfunctional relationship in our day-to-day and our year-to-year. I'm totally for goals. I'm totally for building things. You guys have heard me said, and I continue to think, all right, how are we going to build something that's still here in 100 years? We should be thinking about those things. But just as Jesus is inviting us to live in a Sabbath rest every single day, we would build a promised land in the realm of rest. Because we don't have a dysfunctional relationship with time. We don't have a dysfunctional relationship with the world because we see the perfection and the victory of the cross. If you can find that rest, what would you build? What would you build if you weren't living out of anxiety? You might make some decisions that are different. And I would propose that the American church especially has made a lot of bad decisions because we haven't thought about that. Partially because the cross is just God beating his son, because he much rather would have beat you, but Jesus got in the way. I don't know about you. That inspires a little bit of anxiety in me. I'm just saying. So, there's a little bit of my tangent. But all of that to say is that Jesus declared in Revelation 11:15, we see the angel declares, "Behold, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our God." Right? And yet all of your anxiety-driven end time stuff is telling you, well, things are going to get really, really bad, and there's going to be lots of wars, and it's eventually going to be so many wars that Jesus just comes back, kills a bunch of people along the way, right, and fixes the problem. And yet I'm going, I don't know, dude, because you've got conflicting things here. You've got, on one hand, the kingdoms of this world become the kings of our God, and on the other hand, you've got people saying, well, all of the nations, I don't know if anybody's listening, all of the nations are going to go against Israel and it's going to be a giant war. Well, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our God. Oh, well, that's in the millennium. Bingo. I just got you to give up on a dream that God has for the world. I just got you to cut your faith short. Think about this. Here's another one. Let me just keep going. It's like, anyways, I don't know. Isaiah 65. Listen to this prophecy. Verse 17. It's really good. I mean, it's good in other translations, but I really like, Brian Simmons has it in the Passion Translation now, and he pulls out some of the meanings of the word. It's just really, really good. But it says, look, I'm creating an entirely new heavens and a new earth. And everybody goes, oh, well, see, that's past our time. But read on. They will be so wonderful that no one will even think about the old one anymore. As you wait for the reality of what I am creating, be filled with joy and unending gladness. Look, I am ready to create Jerusalem as a source of sheer joy and her people an absolute delight. I will rejoice in this new Jerusalem, which Revelations says that it sees a new Jerusalem, a people. So a new Jerusalem is a people. And find great delight in my people. You will no longer hear the sound of weeping or cries of distress. No baby will die in infancy there, and everyone will live out their full lifespan. People are still living and dying, people. Jesus hadn't come back yet. People are still living and dying. If you believe in the millennium, still in, we ain't there yet. People are still living and dying. For when centenarians die, they will be considered youngsters. So if you're 100 years old, you're young. And anyone who dies earlier will be considered of no account. People will build their own houses to live in. They will not be taken over by someone else. They will plant their own vineyards to enjoy. They will not be confiscated by someone else. They will live long lives like age-old trees. Doesn't sound like war is going to be ravaging lands. This is Isaiah 65. Sorry, I don't know if I said that wrong. Isaiah 65, and I started in 17 is when this prophecy starts. It says, my chosen ones will enjoy the fullest of the work of their hands throughout their lives. They will neither work in vain for someone else, nor will their children face disaster, for they will be children and grandchildren who are blessed by Yahweh. Before they even call out to me, I will answer them. Isn't that kind of cool? I mean, just take a moment and think about that. Before you call out to him, he's going to answer you. Ooh, that's some fast answers. Before they finish telling me what they need, I have already heard. The wolf and the lamb will graze side by side, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The serpent's food will be dust. There will be neither violence nor murder on my entire holy mountain of Zion, says Yahweh. Isaiah 65, verse 17 is that prophecy. And I encourage you to read it in the Passion Translation, but it's just as good. When is that going to be completed? When is that happening? People are still living and dying, still planting orchards, still making vineyards. Babies are still being born. All of these things. But you're told, well, all of the nations are just going to war against Israel. There's going to be wars. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be awful. It's going to be like the days of Noah, right? And then Jesus comes back to rescue you because you actually can't live out the life of Jesus. Because love doesn't actually work. New year, new me. Woohoo! I'm sorry. But instead, Jesus says, hey, in Revelation, whoa, what is it going to look like? The kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our God. Isaiah 65, that people would, when they're centenarians, when they're 100 years old, they'll be youngsters. Babies won't die in infancy. You'll be able to build lands and they won't be ravaged by war and all these things. And you know what? We go, well, that can't happen. That can't happen. You know what? We'll put that in the millennium. That can't happen. And I'd say, man, I don't know. People are still living and dying. Jesus says he'll come back and totally seal off, finish even death itself. So I'm just saying, hey, you can cherry pick the scripture all you want. But I'm going, we ain't there yet. And you know what? We're not even planning to get there. Think about that. We're not planning to get there. If I were the devil, how would I get you to miss the plan of God for this planet? I'd get you to not even have faith for that kind of thing. I'd get you to believe that for Jesus to come back, there's going to have to be lots of wars. I'm going to have to get you to believe, yeah, before Jesus comes back, there's going to be lots of wars and rumors of wars. It's going to be terrible. That way, the Christians won't ever believe they could stop war from happening because they'll think they need it for Jesus to come back. I'm sorry I'm going after it tonight. I have nothing to lose. I don't know. I'm just asking questions here. You can disagree with me. It's okay. I've been on this journey a long time. But I'm just asking some real questions. What are the roadblocks to your faith? What are your roadblocks? What are the things that are creating unbelief inside of you? Do you see what I'm asking you tonight? I'm asking you, has the devil inspired us to live in unbelief because we wouldn't believe that God could be that good onto planet Earth? Right? If I were the devil, I would say, I don't want them to believe that they could have such an effect on planet Earth that wars would end. I don't want them to have enough faith that they believe that babies would stop dying at birth. I don't want them to believe that they could live past 100. I don't want them to believe these things. So what am I going to do? Well, I'll just tell them that all of those things have to happen for Jesus to come back. There'll have to be lots of wars. It'll be awful like the times of Noah. It'll be all these terrible things, but there'll be this little remnant, and I'll suck up all the good ones and blow up the rest. But what if Jesus was standing in front of you? What type of faith would you have? If you looked in the eyes of Jesus, would you go, this man would not let a baby die. This man would not want me to just die at 100. This man would not want those wars to happen. This man is not coming back because he does not have the faith that he can manifest the full intention of the heart of God through me. What does the word say? The hope of glory is Christ in you. What does hope of glory mean? What is heaven betting everything on? That Christ in you has the ability to manifest the full intention of God's heart for planet Earth. And that full intention, Isaiah 65. That full intention is Revelation 11. The kingdoms of this world becoming the kingdoms of our God. If I were the devil, I'd get you to either put that in heaven or in the millennium, but I would never let you have the chance to possibly touch it. And you know what I just did? I sent spies back and said, you're way too small. The giants are way too big. You can't go into that promised land. And if you believe that, you miss out. One, on the promised land, and two, on the realm of rest. I believe that we're in our promised land right now. Spiritually, we're in it. Jesus is the promised land. Just, you know, we're in the promised land, guys. But he's saying, guys, this is the warning that we could be in the promised land and still miss the realm of rest. I think we're in the promised land, but there's an invitation to experience this realm of rest. And people go, and you know, if you want to be lazy, you can take this and just go, see, God just wants us to be lazy. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there is a realm of rest that when we taste and see it, the things that we will build will go way beyond anything that we could ever conjure up in anxiety. We will build a nation that will change the world. And not, I mean, we are a holy nation, right? A peculiar people. A royal priesthood. I just want to remove the roadblocks to your faith. I'm going to call out the unbelief in your life. And I'm going to say, there's room for some more belief in there, in the goodness of God. I think we've been duped. I just think we've been duped. And you can argue with me, but you can't give me any fruit. You can't. You can say, well, I don't believe that. I think the word says it. Oh, I don't. Sure. I'll believe whatever you, sure. 40,000 other denominations think they got it nailed down too. Got the word perfect. Where's your fruit? You're going to have to look outside of America. You know, but I believe that God is awakening his church. I like to indict a lot of things and say some stuff, but I also want to say I am seeing just an absolute awakening inside of the heart of people and in the church in the West that is waking up and asking some hard questions, and they're starting to say, it's time that we dream bigger. It's time that we plan for the future. And I'm incredibly encouraged by that. I am just incredibly encouraged. I believe the Holy Spirit is just pouring out ideas for the future that are going to reap a harvest of change across the world that we've never seen before. I really do. And you know what? If it all goes down in flames and I'm wrong, but you know what? We can create self-fulfilling prophecies all we want. But at least we'll be able to stand and say that we partnered with God to believe for the what we thought was impossible. And I really believe. I'm seeing it happen. I'm seeing it being birthed in America and across the world. So, all anxiety comes from a dysfunctional relationship with time. You guys can think on that for a while. Took me about a year. Still taking me time. Leave you with that. So how do I land this plane? Nobody knows. Not even me. I didn't plan on getting this far. crash. Yeah. I just believe that the challenge to God, from God to us tonight, is one, to dream bigger, to see differently, and also in this year that we've stepped into, that we would see this realm of rest begin to manifest. How many sermons have you heard about living in the realm of rest? Probably not many, because I've heard so many sermons in my lifetime, and I've heard nobody talk about this. The only rest they talk about is that you should take the Sabbath.
Sabbath. You need to take the Sabbath.
Every other day, you can just strive in religion. The Sabbath, you got to sit on your butt. And I'm like, Jesus is the Sabbath. Live in it every day. Experience a realm of rest that is beyond anything of this world. And you can take your Sabbath. Just saying. Come on, people. I want to live in this in every day. I've tasted supernatural rest at moments in my life. And I am like, I'm going to find a way to live in this. I'm going to find a way that this would become my reality, because this is heaven. That I get to do things with him and yet feel so, I just enjoy the perfection of who I am in him. It's incredible. So that's a good invitation into the promised land. And when we continue to build the culture in the places that we are going in our promised land, realize this. We will create a land. We will create a culture. We will create a movement going towards something. But you know, it's actually all going to be facilitating a realm. Like when we build a church and we build a culture and we build a movement of something and we actually create habits and traditions, what we are actually doing is creating a place for a realm to dwell. And that when people walk into it, they're coming into a promised land, but they were created to live inside a realm. We actually create a facilitation of that realm. And that's what God wants for us. That being said, I'm going to pray. And maybe we'll end with a song or something. Or maybe not. I don't know. Holy Spirit, I just thank you that I think you want us to live crazy. I think you want us to go all in and all out. And I think you want to build something way greater than ourselves. Well, Holy Spirit, I know there's a lot of things deeply ingrained inside of us, but I'm asking you to come and to build a faith inside of us, that we would actually dream for more. I believe we were created to dream for more. I believe that what we have been given is short of what you want to give us. It's short of what you want to build. And so I just say in 2025, Lord, I pray that you would begin to invite us into a realm of rest, and that we would actually begin to encounter rest, encounter life, and yet still build something in the joy of knowing you. That the things that have created unbelief in us, the things that have actually disempowered the supernatural that you're saying this was what you were created to be, would be removed. That the anxiety with time, if we would become a people that would say time is not against us, but it is actually in favor of us, and it is on our side. And because of that, we are going to build something that connects a realm of time and a realm of knowledge.